Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 313. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about salt flats, oxygen bars, and the world's most dangerous road as we go to Bolivia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, we know that smoking can be bad for you, as a passenger found who lit up on a Continental Airlines flight. This flight was from Houston to Ontario, California, and is therefore, like every flight in the U.S., smoke-free. The man did not heed the instructions to put the cigarette out, fought with the flight attendants, caused the plane to be diverted, and is facing federal charges. Delta and some other airlines had to reroute flights also because of fire, but in this case, the fire was on the sun. Because of an immense solar flare, the navigation equipment on planes flying polar routes might have been affected, and so they were rerouted around polar regions. One of the things I like about travel is that people do things differently in different places. In Japan, which has more of a vending machine culture even than the United States, we saw that they have vending machines dispensing baguettes and milk products, and now there's a new one that not only dispenses beer, but it also dispenses Wi-Fi. When you're in a 50-meter radius, whether or not you're buying a product, you can use the Wi-Fi for this machine for free. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Michael TSO, who's coming to us from artofbackpacking.com, and come to talk to us about Bolivia. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. Hello, Chris.
And Bolivia, South America, Northern South America, not a popular country for people to go to. What brought you to Bolivia?
Well, I was traveling north from Argentina, and Bolivia's in the way there, so I had to travel through Bolivia to get into Peru. But I hadn't known much about Bolivia, not too many people were talking about it, and I thought it was really interesting just for that, that not too many people were traveling that way. Most people seem to be flying from Argentina and going into Peru and just skipping Bolivia. So I was curious about the country, and it was deceiving. It seemed smaller than I thought, so I thought I'd be able to pass through it pretty quickly, and not knowing what it had to offer. And that wasn't until I got there, I was like, oh, okay, there's actually a lot here. And then I ended up staying there much longer than I thought.
Now, it's a relatively poor country compared to some of its neighbors.
Yeah, I found that the Bolivians hate to call themselves like the poorest out of South America, but it's definitely true. It's definitely more affordable than any other South American. To me, it was like equivalent to being in China or something. It's definitely cheap place to be for the dollar.
Okay. And what would you recommend for people who happen to be passing through or who intentionally go to Bolivia? What should they see? What kind of itinerary would you recommend?
There's a whole lot. And I think of Bolivia as the land of extremes. It's got, if you want extreme sports, it's got the world's most dangerous road, they call it, the highest peak, the highest capital, mountains everywhere, sceneries, and food that's also claiming the world's danger. So they got like the world's dangerous everything almost.
No, they don't put that on the travel brochure, I'm guessing.
Well, for the world's dangerous road, they actually promote that as like a bike tour. So you can go on the world's most dangerous road and bike down it. And I did that, and that's really neat. And it's somewhat of a pastime that used to be a world's dangerous road and not so much anymore. Bolivia definitely has that kind of title as most dangerous kind of stuff.
It just occurs to me that you and I might be a little different, that they promoted it as the most dangerous road, so you had to bike down it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the fact that it's most dangerous that I did it, it's just that the scenery was incredible.
And that's what I wanted to get into, is I thought that there might be another reason for that.
Yeah, definitely. Not just for the road itself. And the reason why the road is so dangerous is the drop is enormous. So if you fall down, you're done. You fall down from your bike and that's it.
Okay. But you're in the middle of the Andes.
Uh-huh.
On that road. How does Bolivia look different from Peru or Argentina or some of the countries around it?
It's a landlocked country, so mm-hmm. unlike any other country besides Paraguay, it's got no beaches. So it claims that it has more indigenous culture than any other country. I think it's more than 60% of the country that is more indigenous, and even more than half the country speaks another language besides just Spanish. So they also speak other indigenous languages. So that's pretty neat for that. It offers a lot of culture as well, which is, I didn't even know that.
Hmm.
And I think that was pretty cool if you want to see some culture that you can't get out of Argentina. And if you want to date back a long time, you can go and see that kind of stuff. And it's got a lot of Incan stuff too, just like Peru, but it's a bit different, but it's still Inca, but it just seems a bit different.
And what was your route through Bolivia? Where did you come in? What did you see?
Well, I traveled all by land. Mm-hmm. So I went from the border town on Argentina. There's not much to see there. It's just a border town, and that was called Villazón. From there, well, I went to Oruro. The town itself is not much of anything. It used to be a rich mining city, but since it's dropped down to nothing. And now it's become a big festival, actually, in February for Carnaval, the biggest festival, one of the biggest ones in South America outside of Brazil. And it's an incredible experience. If anyone's going to be in Bolivia in February, stick around for Carnaval because it's unbelievable. It's really, really neat. And something I didn't know is that that festival dates back 2,000 years.
So it has pre-Columbian roots.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. It's like before even Carnaval existed, they were already kind of celebrating it in this city. And that's pretty neat.
Okay.
From there, I went to Uyuni, and that's the salt flats,
mm-hmm.
where down and up, everything looks like you're in the sky. The reflection of the sky goes down on the salt, and it looks like the reflection of the sky is also like on the floor as well. It's really like trippy and weird because everything around you is just white. Never seen, never heard of anything like this in my life, and I thought it was just incredible. Everything around you is just white, white. You need sunglasses because it's just going to blind you. And if you want to see like a reflection of the sky on the ground, you never, as far as you could see, it's just all white. It's really neat.
And this is one of those places, too, that you have no perspective of distance because it's so featureless.
Yeah, you cannot know at all. I don't even know how the tour guides know where they're going. They must be just used to how they're getting one place to another or use a compass because you're just in the middle of nowhere.
Hmm.
Not a single tree or anything. You're just in the middle of like a desert.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool. From Uyuni, I went to La Paz, and that is the capital of Bolivia. In the highest capital, I think, in the world. Definitely in South America. Pretty sure in the world. But that city has got a lot of culture and a lot of food, international as well. And it's an interesting city. The city itself doesn't offer a whole lot. It just offers more stuff outside the city, like Death Road, the Dangerous Road.
And the Dangerous Road is going where? Over to Peru from there?
No, actually, it goes north.
Okay.
A lot of people don't actually go anywhere after the Death Road. They actually just come back to La Paz. So it's good for a side trip.
Okay.
It's a full day tour thing. And from La Paz, Lake Titicaca, which is the highest lake in the world. And that one is, you see like kind of like the clouds and the lake really close together. You feel like you're really high up and the altitude definitely kicks in. That one was really neat. And that one right there is where you kind of go into Peru from right there.
And you mentioned the altitude. Did you run into any issues with altitude?
Definitely. I think it destroyed me quite a bit, especially in La Paz where everything's on a mountain or on a hill or the whole city is just on a slope. So if you're going down like one block, it feels like a mission. You look at the map and you see that you only got to go three blocks. Those three blocks is going to feel like 10.
So it's at high up, you're not getting as much oxygen, you're already tired, and then they built it on a hill.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand it. It's really difficult to walk around and for it to be a major city and a capital. It's hard, but I think it affects everybody differently. It just did not hurt me really badly.
And did you do anything to, I mean, generally they recommend if you really have problems with altitude sickness, the solution is go to lower altitude. But you weren't having that serious enough problems. You were just having the fatigue.
Yeah, you can't really do much. They have remedies there, and they say coca leaves mm-hmm. helps. And Bolivia is very popular for coca leaves. And they're producing more coca leaves now than even before. They're the recent president saying we want more coca leaves. So there's a ton of it all over the place. And so you can put that as like a tea or chew it or something. And that generally helps with altitude sickness.
Okay.
Then you can go to an oxygen bar. I've never been to one of those, but I tried it. And that was pretty neat, I guess. I don't pay you to have oxygen.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the culture in La Paz. You said it was a rich city culturally. Can you give some examples of that?
There's a lot of indigenous cultures that come over there to sell a lot of the artifacts and stuff like that, and especially the tourist sections. Like, one part of La Paz is in the artifact section. It's like witch doctors and selling like remedies or drugs that the indigenous cultures use. And you can see that just all over the streets on this one particular street. And the food is pretty mixed in La Paz. It's got international stuff, which is rare for Bolivia, and a bit of the local foods as well. So you're pretty much all over Bolivia. You could see everyone dressed up, actually, just like in their outfits that they wear, like a top hat, and their clothing that's made out of llama or alpaca. You know, alpaca's clothing is very popular in Bolivia.
Okay. What was the best day of your trip? What really stands out? Which day of the trip?
Best day of the trip, I think, was in Uyuni for the Salar Salt Flats.
Mm-hmm. And you did a private tour of that?
Not a private tour. You can do private tours. I think they're pretty expensive, but I did a group tour.
Okay.
And I don't remember how much I paid at the time, but it wasn't so bad, and it was for 2 nights and 3 days.
It was something that fit on a backpacker budget.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah. But they do offer privates where you can take a Jeep and they bring you to either a hotel or a guest house.
Okay.
But for the backpacker one, it was for 2 nights and 3 days. And they took you to the Salar, to the middle of the desert. The guest houses were pretty neat. And I think that was a big highlight from my time in Bolivia. The Salar is incredible. I've never heard of anything like that. And it was just amazing.
Okay. And then usually I'm gathering, Michael, you're in the hostel crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
Any recommendations in terms of lodging in Bolivia?
Actually, you know, the only place I stayed in the hostel was in La Paz. Everywhere else has guest houses.
Okay.
And I think that's just that La Paz is the major city, so you're more likely to find a hostel over there. But in all the other places, guest houses and hotels, it's basically the same price of a hostel if you could even find a hostel. So I generally stayed actually in hotels everywhere else in Bolivia besides La Paz.
Okay. I was wondering because you had said it was less expensive.
Yeah. Even I think the hotels itself in La Paz are pretty affordable. Might have been the same price actually as a hostel if I had looked.
Okay. And then you also mentioned something about the Bolivian food versus international food. What is Bolivian food?
To be honest, for any Bolivians that are listening, I did not like the Bolivian food all that much. I don't know. I just kind of felt that it was very repetitive. So it's a lot of rice and a lot of chicken, just meat as well. But it started to get very repetitive with the meat and rice. I just wanted something different. The only city that really offers international cuisine is in La Paz. And there's not a whole lot. It's usually like expats that move to La Paz. So if you're looking for international stuff and you're craving it, La Paz is definitely the place for that.
Okay.
But in terms of Bolivian cuisine, I don't have too much to say because I wasn't too much of a fan of it.
All right. And then what time of year were you there?
Yeah, I was in Bolivia for Carnival in February. Yeah, and that's rainy season for Bolivia. So it did rain quite often, but for Salar, it's actually good if it rains because then you can walk on the water and the reflection is bigger, but during the dry season, the reflection is not as good.
Okay.
But then, you know, the rest of your trip is all rain then, which kind of sucks. But for the Solara, it's actually a good idea if it rains. And then, of course, the Carnival is awesome. So if it rains, that's all right.
And then I don't know how you did your travel planning, but did you find recommendations in the guidebooks or wherever that you would recommend against, even though everyone else said to do it?
I don't think I went to anywhere where I would say I didn't enjoy it enough to tell someone not to go there.
Okay.
I think that the places that I went to, I would tell everyone else to go to as well. Maybe if I had traveled other cities where I could say that, yeah. But I think for all the places that I went to, they were all good for its own thing.
Okay.
I would just maybe spend more or less time in each place.
For instance?
Maybe less time in La Paz.
Okay.
Because it's just a big city, and maybe I would have enjoyed. It depends on the kind of person that wants to travel. If you like big cities, La Paz is pretty cool.
Okay. And then the flip side of that, anything that you discovered through locals or guides or whatever that you wouldn't have figured out from the resources you were using to plan the trip?
For your uni, when I went on the tour, there was a lot of things that I didn't know to expect out of the tour. The guides don't really tell you what is going to happen on the tour. They kind of like throw the tour at you, and then you expect to know what's going to happen during the tour. I did not know that Bolivia was going to be so cold so often.
Okay.
And it's kind of weird. It can get hot, and then it can get really cold. And one of the things I noticed, the locals told me, like, make sure you take warm clothing with you. Because at night, it's freezing. Because you're in high altitude. And right. I didn't really realize that. Like, you're so high up.
Well, it's also fairly arid, too, I think, right?
Yeah, and bring sunscreen, even though it's cold. The sun was really strong, you know, so I was getting burned, but I was freezing. So it was confusing what to do there.
And then speaking of the sunscreen, any other warnings you would have for Bolivia?
Bolivia is not an easy place to go to. It can get a little frustrating sometimes, actually, because the Bolivians are pretty relaxed people. Something goes wrong, they're kind of like pretty relaxed about it. They don't really generally get too angry, or they don't know what the problem is. So it's just you kind of have to have the same attitude. If something goes wrong, you just got to say, well, this is travel, and you just got to kind of go with it. That was my only complaint of Bolivia, is just that things can go wrong, and it doesn't seem to bother anybody else, but it bothers travelers. So you just got to take things one at a time in Bolivia.
Well, like, what sort of things went wrong for you?
Like bus travel.
Ah, okay. Just not as reliable.
Yeah, or food. If you got to wait an hour to get a burger or, I don't know, a plate of rice, and you're waiting an hour for it. They're just very relaxed about everything.
Okay.
And you got to just relax a bit, I guess, in Bolivia.
Hmm. One picture that you took that really brings you back to Bolivia, just really captured your trip for you.
Every time I look at my pictures of Carnaval.
Okay.
I remember how just insane that partying was, because any kind of Carnival picture where I see people dressed up in really crazy costumes that really just don't make any sense. So it looks like a monster. And it kind of brings me back to that, because I've never been to a party quite like that one.
In terms of language, how much did you run into an issue? You speak Spanish.
Yeah, I do. So it was much easier to travel around.
And were you generally having to use the Spanish to get by, or would somebody be able to get by not knowing Spanish?
I would say you would definitely need to know a bit of Spanish.
Okay.
La Paz, you could probably get away with not knowing any English, but even the tour guide in your uni, the Salida uni, you still need to know quite a bit of Spanish. And even if you know Spanish, their accent is very different from other South American countries. And even if you know Spanish, definitely you still need to listen in quite carefully. Because they even mix an indigenous kind of slang and words in there. So,
yeah, I've seen that even in like Mexico and the Yucatan. They'll do the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Different dialect.
Yeah.
What was the biggest surprise about Bolivia?
I didn't know that it had so many, like I said before, it's just the land of extreme stuff with the sports and scenery. I didn't know I can go through a near-death experience or a near-death through food. I ate world's most dangerous vindaloo curry in La Paz.
Vindaloo curry? Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know that that could be a thing. I just, they had an Indian restaurant there,
and that was the way they advertised the restaurant.
Yeah. Well, that, it wasn't a sign right in the front, but it's on the menu, and I think it's a something that's on some guidebooks that you can do. I ate the curry, but I was dead for like the next week. I couldn't eat a decent meal anymore. I was sick. Yeah, it was just too spicy and too much food. So it wasn't very pleasant. But I got a shirt out of it, and that's why we do stupid things, to get a shirt. And that's what I realized. In Bolivia, you can do a lot of stupid things, but at least you can get a shirt.
My next question was going to be, what do you wish you had known? I guess, you know, you already did know about the curry, so that really didn't help you. So,
yeah, if you do the world's most dangerous road, you get a shirt out of that too. So you can just like come out of Bolivia with a ton of shirts that says survived, and then just another phrase in there.
When did you feel closest to home? When it was most familiar? And when did you feel furthest from home? When it was most foreign?
La Paz definitely has a lot of international stuff. So if you're missing
Pizza Hut or
chains, hotels or whatever, yeah. If you're missing that stuff, La Paz really has it. Especially since the capital, it's got it all. And if you're flying into Bolivia, chances are that's where you're going.
Okay.
And then the least was probably when I was in the border town of Bolivia. I actually got stuck in that town because I didn't realize that train travel can be quite difficult. You have to book your train either the day before or the day of. I'd be stuck in the town for an extra day or two because it would sell out.
Oh, okay.
And that's what happened to me in this border town. It was an interesting kind of local experience. There was nothing there besides small little shops and markets and just people just living day by day.
Okay.
I think that's definitely something. If someone wants to travel by train, remember that you can only book it a day in advance.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Bolivia.
Carnival. What happened was, because it was Carnival, there was a lot of foreigners there as well. And you can water balloon fight. They had tons of water balloons. You buy it off the street already made with the water. And there was basically a bunch of foreigners versus all the locals. And there was only like 10 foreigners. But the other side of the street was all locals. And the locals, there was like hundreds of them or something. And we were winning a little bit with throwing water balloons back at them. And it was like one side of the street versus the other side of the street. But then all of a sudden, hundreds of people started rushing at us with water balloons flying in every single direction.
Before we go to the last two questions, did you have any last tips for somebody who's going to go to Bolivia?
For one thing, just take things as they go in Bolivia and just go there and don't worry so much. I think that not a lot of people talk about Bolivia and they should just be going. And just when you get there, to take things easy and remember that things work in a much slower pace.
Okay.
For example, the train travel and stuff, mm-hmm. and the food and stuff.
Okay. And then finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Bolivia when what?
You know when you're in Bolivia when it takes an hour just to get simple things done, when you just want your sandwich and you're hungry, but you got to wait an hour. If you just want a simple plate of rice and you got to wait a while, that's when you definitely know you're in Bolivia.
And if you had to summarize Bolivia in three words, what three words would you use?
World's most dangerous. Well, in terms of just sports, not in terms of crime or anything.
Excellent. Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show. Where can people read more about your travels?
You can find me on my blog on artofbackpacking.com, my Twitter, Art of Backpacking without the G, and Facebook with simply Art of Backpacking.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your travels in Bolivia.
Thank you, Chris, for having me.
In news of the community, a little while back, I heard from Daniel from Madrid, who wrote and said, first of all, I'd like to thank you. It is incredible the work you do with the podcast and the webpage. I started hearing the podcast more or less a year ago. I used it in order to improve my English, and I have heard during this last year every podcast you have recorded. Now I have finished number 309 podcasts, so I'm up to date with the show, and thanks to you, my English comprehension has skyrocketed. Now, I'm hooked on the content of the show. I consider myself an amateur traveler, and I enjoy discovering with your guests every corner of the world. I also like remembering the places I have visited: New York, Beijing, Xi'an, Paris, London, Rome, Argentina's Patagonia. Thanks again for making it so easy for us non-English speakers to follow your work. Your pronunciation and the audio quality are superb and allow us to get involved in the weekly trip you board us into. I completely agree with the institutions you have mentioned that use your work to teach English. I know this mail is much too flattering, but I really don't find any way to improve so far. Please, please continue with this and let us follow you to the most amazing destinations in the world. Thanks so much, Daniel, for probably the nicest email I've gotten in some time, and I'm glad you find the show useful. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler, but there are, as Daniel wishes, more to come. If you would like to get in touch, you can do what Daniel did and send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or you can leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And don't forget to join the Facebook community at facebook.com/amateurtraveler, where, again, I'm giving things away for free. And as always, thanks so much for listening.